Hello and welcome to a special edition of the In the Money Players podcast for Thursday, September 9th. This one is brought to you by our friends at the Betmakers and Global Tote, and it's going to be all about this Thursday card at Kentucky Downs. A short lead time on this one, but maybe that's not a bad thing in terms of being able to get all the up-to-the-minute information for what's proved to be a challenging meet, but also a rewarding meet when you can get things right. And we're here today with two players whose opinions I always want to hear when it comes to all things Kentucky Downs. Let's start off with a returning guest who's really making a reputation for himself for giving out pick fives on our airwaves. He spent time as a racing manager, as a professional bettor, currently helping run a stable, owning horses, being a new dad, all kinds of things we can say about our friend Blake Jesse. Blake, how are things?
Oh, it's going great, Pete. Excited for another day of turf racing and full fields at Kentucky Downs.
Don't forget that low takeout, too. We got to throw that one in there. And then also joining us, a man who's a big fan of Kentucky Downs, and he follows industry matters very closely. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have him on this BetMakers-sponsored podcast for Kentucky Downs from the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation. It's Pat Cummings. Pat, what's up?
Hello, Peter Thomas. Good to be back with you again.
So you're going to be physically at Kentucky Downs today. I know this day there, BetMakers are sponsoring. What does that mean in terms of their involvement? What can you tell folks who might not have heard any of the BetMakers saga before about what their initiative is here in the United States?
So it's an Australian company, a business-to-business provider of services within the racing industry. They are championing the introduction of fixed odds in New Jersey for New Jersey bettors. And so the facilitation of that is going through BetMakers, and the New Jersey Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association through Monmouth has signed a 10-year deal with them. And you know that they are the ones really bringing that into this space and have done so rather enthusiastically. But they're not just about bringing fixed odds to American racing, but also changing the parimutuel business too, and modernizing that. And the firm a few months back bought the tote assets of Sportech. Sportech was one of the three tote companies really operating within North America, and now under the brand Global Tote, a BetMakers company, they're continuing that. And I think it's very exciting that the same group that's trying to bring fixed odds to America and is doing that essentially in New Jersey here in the coming months is also very interested in evolving the tote. I think it's really good for the American business.
Something you and I have been hammering on for a long time, Pat, the need to update things in the tote realm to keep the game in a spot where it can continue to compete and succeed in a sports betting landscape. And I've had extensive conversations with the team over there, and I firmly believe this isn't some disruptor outsider coming in looking out for their own interest. They only win if the industry at large wins, and I think that's why we see them doing things like promoting a day at forward-thinking Kentucky Downs with its low takeouts and full fields, and also, frankly, doing things like supporting us over here on the In the Money Media Network. A lot of times when people say that they're industry first, you have to wonder if that's a code for something else. And in this case, I think there's every indication to believe it.
They see opportunity in American racing, and those are rare words spoken in, you know, in this general space. So, I think that's very encouraging for horse people. It should be encouraging for horse players, although I deal and have had plenty of conversations with those that are skeptical of the introduction of fixed odds, and horsemen too. But I think anybody who looks at American racing and says there's opportunity to do a lot more here, that's exciting. And that's not what we've been hearing in this country, in this sport in recent years. So I'm very excited by their introduction into American racing.
There's a lot to unpack there, and we don't have time to get to it all today, but I do want to bring in Blake just to ask him, as somebody who I know who spent a lot of time around the world betting horses as well as just here in the USA, if fixed odds betting on American racing is something that he'd be intrigued by.
Absolutely. I mean, you'd have to be blind to, you know, not see the problems we've been having with late odds changes in North America the last 10 years. It was nice to see Naira step up and, you know, try to, put a plug on that leak a little bit. But you know, it's very hard to make a win bet nowadays with confidence, knowing what price you're going to get. So, yeah, I'm very much welcoming fixed odds betting. So can't wait for it.
We're going to get into the specifics of the form here in just a minute, but I do want to just shout out that we have a Horse Player Happy Hour contest today. And if folks haven't gotten involved in this yet, well, shame on you or shame on me for not publicizing it better, because I really think it's one of the best opportunities in contests. We've got a few weeks left of what we're calling our regular season. We've added two Breeders' Cup betting challenge seats to the prize pool at no cost to players. One of those, somebody starting today, would still have every chance to get by either going on a big run these last few weeks or simply finishing in the top two spots in any of the weeks, which would make them eligible for an 80-person tournament for a Breeders' Cup betting challenge seat, a $10,000 asset. It costs just $20 to play. The VIG, such as it is, goes to Thoroughbred Aftercare. Horseplayers.com is the place to sign up. We appreciate the support. We know that organizations like the TRF and TAA appreciate the support. And it's one of these things where, heck, even if you don't have time to handicap, go in there and play all the fours, because it's supporting a great cause. And we vote with our dollars in this game. And if we want organizations to continue to create these excellent opportunities for horse players, we need to support them. Horse Player Happy Hour. Go to horseplayers.com to check that out. Today's game starts in race number 3 at Kentucky Downs. That's 227. And then around 5 o'clock on the Breeders' Cup social media, Matt Bernier and I will be joining you for a live stream to cover those. It's not going to be it'll be the last three races of the contest. The contest does not include the nightcap today. It goes from 3 through 10 at Kentucky Downs, but go to horseplayers.com and check that out. We're going to talk about the late pick 5 on the show, 4 of the races that will be part of Horse Player Happy Hour. But before we get to that, Blake, you mentioned off air, you had some potential interest in a couple of races early on. We don't want to miss your thoughts on those. Where should we turn our programs?
Let's turn to page 2. We have a 30 never win 2 life going 6.5 for fillies and mares. You know, there's a lot of parity in this race, but if you turn all the way to the last page here, the 11 Swanage, you know, Chris Hartman, he looks like he's really got a plan picked out here. He claimed this filly back on August 1st for 10,000. And, you know, she's her lone win was a maiden breaker at 2 here at Kentucky Downs. So I just I really feel like he's, you know, put the plan together here and said, let's go after this one horse for course. You know, has a couple works coming into the race, but I just really like the chances of number 11 Swanage 10-1 on the morning line. If we can get anywhere near, you know, 6-7-1, I'm going to be all over this. So I will be trying the 11 Swanage.
Couple of things just to piggyback off that. Mike Maloney in our Kentucky Downs preview show was all over the idea of horses for courses at Kentucky Downs. And then you mentioned the morning line, which actually betmakers and their technology are contributing to. And from the days I've seen, have looked pretty good outside of the fact that I suppose they couldn't have predicted that Joel Rosario was going to win 10 races in 2 days and the odds on all of his were going to be halved. But we'll forgive them that. Anyway, just another little note on how they're helping the industry and using their technology for the good of the sport. Blake, anything else before we get into our late pick 5?
Yeah, turning to race 5, a 1X allowance going the full you know, lap here, a 1 5/16. I'm looking at the 4, Camp Hope, making its second start on the turf. And, you know, this horse gives every indication that more ground is going to be what it needs. So I really like the chances of this one taking another step forward here. So number 4, Camp Hope, 8-1 on the morning line, going to be giving this one a big chance.
Looking at pace figures, I can see what you mean about this this son of Summer Front shaping like he wants more ground, and that looks like a Claiborne family there out of the pulpit. Dam Sire also giving indications probably distance is going to be okay for that one. Shall we move on to our first race of this pick 5, which goes as race number 7? It is a 3 and up starter allowance for fillies and mares going 6.5 on the turf. Pat Cummings, we're going to bring you back in to kick things off.
So the 7th and 8th today are both kind of these claiming crown prep races. So it's a starter allowance 25, both of them. But you know, these horses potentially have eyes on essentially staying protected to be able to run for some pretty big money. Mind you, the $100,000 purse today in this 7th race is nothing to shake a stick at. But I found this a very challenging race on form. I think it's worth noting that the 6.5 furlong distance here, based on the charts that Equibase has published, are actually playing more like 7 furlongs. Yesterday in the post-race charts, it was published that a 6.5 furlong race at this rail setting yesterday had a 352-foot run-up. That's essentially a 7 furlong race with 22 feet of run-up, if that makes sense.
It does. It's so you're strange, looking for, but it makes sense.
Yeah. I think you're looking for horses that want a little bit of extra ground, and that's the way I've kind of approached these races. I'll tell you what, I mean, I think the most impressive race that any horse in this field has run was 3 starts back for the number 3 Lady of Luxury, who was just incredibly impressive. Third start on the turf in her career. It was at Churchill Downs, and she, under today's jockey Mitchell Merle and kind of a regular rider of late, just absolutely blew away a field. And the third place finisher in that race, Via Lenza, came back to win a restricted or to win a $100,000 stake at Colonial Downs and did it pretty well. But it was a very nice effort. And I don't think she had a lot of opportunity to run down the leader at Indiana Grand last time. It was a bit of a slower pace. She could not run past Short Summer Dress, but I think the added distance here helps her, and particularly the fact that it plays a little bit longer. So my lean was on number 3, Lady of Luxury. I think it's very worth noting that number 7, Jungle Juice, has a lot of back form in Europe, a daughter of Bungle in the Jungle, who was a real hard-knocking type in England and Ireland quite some time ago, the sire of this one. But she's been around these undulating courses previously and gets back to the grass for the first time in a while. So I thought this was a race that, despite the short field, was leaning towards a price. So I thought the 3 and the 7 were the horses I wanted to start my pick 5 with.
Sounds good. Yeah, Bungle in the Jungle, good hunch play for Jethro Tull fans as well. Maybe that extends to the progeny, including the hilariously named Jungle Juice. Blake, how do you see this one?
I actually see it similarly. I actually like the 3 Lady of Luxury quite a bit here. I'm going to be using her as a lone A. You know, Pat alluded to, you know, the long run up here and how he's treating this more as, you know, a 7 furlong race and looking for horses that perhaps want a little more ground. I actually, you know, look at it the opposite way, being that the first furlong is downhill. I kind of, you know, look at that as, you know, a cheat, kind of like, you know, that's not really a true 6.5. That's more like a 5.5 because they're getting to run the first furlong downhill. So, just kind of wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah,
but anyhow, Lady of Luxury is going to be where I'm going to, you know, put my lone A. But as far as backups go, I've really felt like Strong Odor, you know, that last start at Saratoga, you know, really wasn't sure where that start came from. But, you know, if she takes another step forward, she's right there. So I will use the 2 as a little bit of a backup, and the 5, Beantown Baby.
All right, let's move on to race.
3 is lone A, B 2-5.
We got it. Excellent stuff. Let's move on to race number 8, starter allowance once again. 6.5 on the turf. This is the boys' division of this race. Blake, we'll keep it with you. Some familiar names in here.
Yeah, you know, this is, you know, another race where contention goes deep. We should say the 7 connector looks like it's going to be a scratch. You know, I really am liking the 9, Charcoal. You know, got on the turf. It did have a start on the turf early in its career, but it's been on the turf 3 out of its last 4 starts, and it's really turned into a different horse. And I'm going to try the 9, Charcoal, as a lone A in here. But there is some other horses that intrigue me. The 2, Mystery Messenger, really has done nothing wrong. Hasn't been out of the exacta in the last 3 starts. So I'll use the 2. I'll try the 4, Shiraz. And another horse that hasn't tried the turf yet, but his form, or her form is, excuse me, the trainer. She is a filly, Michael Ann Ewing, but the horse is a gelding. He really has, you know, come into form the last few starts. So I'm going to give that one a try on the turf. So I'll do 2, 4, 5 as my backups, but I'll go number 9, Charcoal, as my lone A.
That's Ash Flat, number 5, in the mix for Blake as a backup. Pat, how do you see this one?
Yeah, I was actually with Blake on the nine charcoal. It feels like it's a bit of a class test for this gelding, but those last two, particularly the last start at Indiana Grand, were, it was a really impressive effort. Certainly was treated as such on the buyer's scale, getting a 94, but a lot of action was happening in front of them, and really just kind of sat patiently, waited, and just exploded in the lane. I think we have the same sort of situation here, but you know, I get the feeling that people are starting to look elsewhere away from some of the Mike Maker runners. He comes in with a Bad Beat Brian, the eight off of avoided claim at Del Mar, getting this horse back. He claimed it two starts ago, and then a claim against it was voided last time. And then, as Blake mentioned, number four, Shiraz. Look, they fit, right? There's no arguing that point, but Maker 1 for 24 to meet that he normally dominates. Now, mind you, that's with 11 seconds and thirds combined from those 24 starts, but it's also kind of carried over to jockey Tyler Gaffalione. His numbers really pretty poor considering his standard of performance here in the past. He also with just one win at the meet so far. So it's been a bit of a rough go for him. He's 1 for 26. Most of those are for the Maker horses. So it's not my favorite race in the sequence here, but I am going to lean on that nine charcoal. And I was thinking of also adding the six Lamartine for Juan Cano. Getting back onto the turf, you know, I don't think he had a whole lot of excuses last time when stretching out to a mile on the grass at Ellis, but there is some back form there, and I just thought he might be an interesting play in here to include.
I'm not often that big a fan of the turn back on the turf the way I am on the dirt, but I will say Lamartine looks like an interesting candidate for one, just looking at the pace line that he ran last time. At the end of the day, Pat, you mentioned the four and the eight. Do you want me to list them as horses you'd consider backing up within this spot, or did you lean against?
I did not. I don't use the eight Bad Beat Brian at all on my ticket. I will be using the four and six behind the nine.
Okay, sounds good. So the nine is a lone A, the four and the six as backups in that one, which will move us right along to race number nine. And we've got a two-year-old stakes action here. This is the Global Tote Juvenile Sprint Stakes, 6.5 on the firm turf. You were explaining before, Pat, about Global Tote being sort of the rebranded Sport Tech tote arm that is under the auspices of BetMakers at this point, and this is their big race that they're sponsoring here today. Who do you like in it?
My day banks in this race. It's going to be a good day or a bad day, depending on how number three Masetto runs. I love the horse here in this particular spot. I think he absolutely towers over this field on class. You have an experienced two-year-old from Europe that's coming in, formerly with Donica O'Brien, ran very well in the Coventry Stakes where he finished ahead of Coffee Maker, number 10 here at the down the bottom on the outside in this race. The DJ stable of Len Green, they bought this horse, I think, out of his first career start. I think I'm correct on that. They've got a few European imports here at this meet, which we don't often see with some of these younger horses, but they've brought them over. Mark Cassie now picks up the training, three decent works at Saratoga to kind of freshen him up. But the performance in the Coventry and then subsequently his third beaten 2.5 in the Railway Stakes, that is really top quality form compared to some of these horses that are just coming in off of maiden wins. This horse has really been kind of bounced about in some very tough company and performed admirably as such. I'm all in on Masetto today, single A on my tickets, and I'll be playing him in that same capacity in other multi-race plays as well, and probably a pretty significant win bet too. So I'm all in on Masetto.
Do you think we'll
get... save a lot of time here?
Okay, go ahead.
I'm the same way as Pat. And my only concern about this horse is Tyler. Just hopefully Tyler can, you know, he can put the bad days behind him he's had here the first 3 days, and hopefully things go right today, because I agree with Pat. This horse just lays over.
The good news for that is that I think there's plenty of speed in here that's going to run away from him early. He has not been getting the pace I think he needs, particularly in that race, the Railway Stakes last time. It should be noted, Craig Burnick actually owns the second place finisher there, Castle Star. They came back, and Gobert's Go and Castle Star came back in another Group 2 event after that and ran in the top four in a very competitive race. So they've backed that form up. But those races have not had a ton of speed. Now, there was speed in the Coventry Stakes in Macedo with staying on. If he replicates that fourth place effort in that race at Royal Ascot, he should be winning this. I think he'll love this long stretch. He'll love the turn. He'll love the pace that he's going to get in front of him. So I think a lot of good signs towards
him. What are the odds we get anything near this 7-2 of the morning line, Blake? Do you think it's going to materialize?
You know, it's tough to say, but, you know, I think we could possibly get 5-2, you know, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, I mean, I would take that too. It all
depends on how much they go for Wesley Ward, who in these types of spots just gets so much attention. And people
Brian
are
gonna, Lynch is going to get bet in here too. The 5 Red Danger.
Yeah, yeah, off an impressive maiden win.
Yeah, yeah, it's an interesting race, and hopefully that number will materialize. This will be one of the races that we're covering on Horse Player Happy Hour. So if folks want to tune in later, I'll tweet out the link on my at Looms Boldly, or you can find it on Breeders' Cup Facebook or Twitter as well. Let's move on to more stakes action. We've got the 3 and up fillies and mares in the One Dreamer this time around, going a mile 70 on the turf. And Blake, you didn't get to talk that much last time, so we're going to send it right back to you.
Yeah, so I've really got it narrowed down to two fillies in here that I really, you know, I feel like lay over in here, and that's the 7 Dominga, Brad Cox filly. It's coming in that's really done nothing wrong in her last 3 starts. A first, a second by a neck, and a second beaten a half in the preview over at Ellis. So definitely be using her. And the 10, Hendy Woods, another one that just, you know, really feels like that's continues to improve, speed figure wise. So I'll be using 7 and 10 as A's and just hope to get to the next leg.
Pat, how do you see it? More agreement here in the One Dreamer, or did you have another view?
Alas, yes. Doesn't necessarily make for good content, but I'm also I would put them in order of 10 and 7. Hendy Woods' performance last time, granted, the pace was not all that quick, and she just sort of sat in the same position most of the way. But you know, Viadera comes out of that race and wins the Ballston spot 4-5 in her next start, obviously with a bit of a different setup. No others have run back out of that race at Saratoga, but she could face a little more adversity here, but I've got the 10 on top of the 7. And look, at the end of the day, this race and several others like it here at the meter, you know, these stakes that are for horses that have not won a stakes race in recent months. So you get a lot of battlers and a couple horses who are taking steps up, and I tend to appreciate the quality of the battlers.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. I think you've both shown that in the ones you've picked. And hey, another chance to shout out Glen Hill Farm and Craig Burnick with this being the One Dreamer Stakes. I realize we shouldn't let that pass. So that'll be the last race of our Horse Player Happy Hour. For folks who can't get enough contest action, got to remember that the 3rd of the 3 Kentucky Downs contests is going to be happening immediately, right? It picks back up on this weekend with the stakes action we've got over there. So take a look if you're looking for all the details on the Kentucky Downs Turf Handicapping Challenge. You can go to inthemoneypodcast.com/kingturf to get all the details on that. But the day itself and this pick 5 we've been talking about wrap up, of course, in our nightcap. We've got 2-year-old maidens going this 6.5 on the firm turf. Once again, Pat, we'll send it back to you for the question we always ask at the end of these shows. How are we going to get paid?
I am quite hopeful of maybe getting a little bit of a price here on number 9, Pray for Peace. Chris Hartman, Mitchell Merrill. Got bumped at the start last time and then kind of checked again after that and basically ended up last and closed into a slowish pace. I thought it was, all things considered, a really pretty decent effort for this now. That was on debut. And again, coming back to a race that is going to test stamina on some of these who've been over the shorter trips, now to go a little bit longer, I think it's there for Pray for Peace to do it. And so I'm using him as a bit of a price in the A spot on my tickets. There's just some obvious horses that you anticipate will run back and probably run pretty decently, right? The Wesley Ward duo of three, Castle Leoc and the 11 Admiral Halsey, both of whom take blinkers off. I looked into the stats on that, and it's pretty much just stock standard Wesley Ward numbers, 25% or so when he's taken blinkers off of two-year-olds in maiden races. And then the 8 Atrus, Gold Heritage, whom Atrus lost to last time. I did not think Atrus got the most exuberant of rides from Brian Hernandez last time. Comment Line says hung and held the place, but it just did not seem all that energetic late as Gold Heritage came swooping over the top. But Gold Heritage did come back and ran pretty well in a two-year-old stake at Colonial Downs on Virginia Derby Day. And so Atrus, maybe given a chance with that experience behind him, could improve in the second start. But the prices on all of those aforementioned, not as great as I think the price is going to be on 9 Pray for Peace. And looks to me, if he gets a bit of a cleaner trip, a chance to improve.
Pray for Peace has that angle I always love when you see a first-time starter who caught a little bit of money and then had trouble coming back in that second start as a price. It seems very often they'll outrun their odds. There can be real signal in the way they're bet first up, and that's an interesting angle on Atrus as well. Potentially having a little bit more in the locker now with the big money on the line. Blake, Jesse, who wins the nightcap?
Yeah, Pat and I see it just about the same way. I have Pray for Peace as an A as well. Now, the outside horse that Wesley Ward here has, Admiral Halsey, that horse has been outworking his other one, Castle Leoc, in the morning. So if I'm, you know, trying to narrow down the two Wesleys, I'm definitely using the 11 Admiral Halsey over the 3. So I got 9 and 11 as my A's. You know, as far as backups going here, I'm definitely going to be using Liam the Brave. You know, this is a meet Mike Land Ewing always, you know, gets her young ones pointed towards. So I'll be using the 5. And I'll also use Circle Back Jack, who's another horse, the 4, that comes out of the same race as the 9, Pray for Peace. So 4, 5. As backups in here, and 9 and 11 as my A's.
I like it. Some real prices to potentially close this thing out and make it pay. Well, gentlemen, I think we should get this show up and running. We don't have much lead time on it, but I want to thank you both for hopping in here at the last minute and sharing your insights.
We have some just going to add one more thing.
Yeah, please.
There's a high five carryover of 17,200 in the last race, and that's a 50-cent bet, non-jackpot, so... have at it.
That's very, very cool. Do you have any thought on betting strategy with those numbers you mentioned? I mean, would you look to key your A's and feather in the B's, or how would you look?
That's exactly what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be going 9-11, 9-11, and you know, using my B's underneath with some alls.
I love it. Yeah, that sounds excellent. Thank you for pointing that out. Host fail on me for missing it, but that's, you know, that's why we have guests like Blake and Pat on these shows. Keeps me honest. So we'll wrap things up. We'll thank Blake, Jesse. We'll thank Pat. Have a great day, Pat, out there at the races. We'll thank our friends at the Betmakers for sponsoring the show, and our friends at Kentucky Downs, who are back in the money fold this year as well. It's been great getting a chance to work with them as well. We look forward not only to today, but then a great weekend of racing as well. Don't forget to check out the last of the 3 handicapping contests that's going to be happening out there as well. Should be some great action for players to get involved in. That's going to do it. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos!